excited for today. It's awesome to have a chance to worship God together. And the passage we're going to be looking at in 2 Peter, it's going to have something about what's special about us or who we are, who we're supposed to be. It's going to have something about who are Baptists, which stick with me on that one. I think you'll find it interesting even if you don't care right at this second. And but we're building towards what's right in front of me. And we get to experience Jesus, and that's what we're building towards. So if you have a Bible, you can turn in 1 Peter chapter 2, and it's going to be verse 4 is where we'll start. As you come to him, this is talking about Jesus, as you come to Jesus, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him. Throughout the whole passage today, pay attention to how Jesus is described and then how we are described. So here it says that Jesus is the living stone. Yeah, he's rejected by people, but God chose him and he's precious to God. Keep those in your mind and see how we're going to be spoken of here in a minute. The first part of the next verse says, you also, so just like Jesus, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house. So Jesus is the living stone, but it says here that God's going to treat us like Jesus. That's what we're signing up for when we say, I want to be a Christian. We're saying, I want to be like Jesus. And God actually stoops down to us and says, okay, I'm going to treat you in a way that's going to mold you to be like Jesus. And the first step here, he says, is we're being built into a spiritual house. So we're stones being built together to make something. And there's lots of folks out there who think, well, I'm going to have a relationship with God by myself. I'm going to do my own thing over here, and I don't need to get involved with anyone else. And they sometimes say that because they've had these terrible experiences with groups of people like us, like broken people at a church, and we're not perfect, and sometimes we do. I mean, you don't have to go outside of these walls and point fingers. Like, sometimes we are not all we're meant to be. And so some people think, like, well, the answer to that is I'm going to go do my own thing. Problem is, like, we are a mess. You know, we'll talk about that, but this is where God wants us. God wants us together being built by him. So how does that work? So he says, built together into a spiritual house. What God's getting at is, I want to live inside of you, but he doesn't mean you in the singular. He's saying, I want to live inside of you as a group. I want to build you together to where I can be fully inside of you. So I've got a picture here. This is my friend Drew. I got to work with one summer down in Mexico. And we're working on mixing a batch of concrete. Drew's pouring some water in. I want to talk a little bit about this because as far as construction goes, this is one of the pieces I've had some experience with is, you know, make some concrete. It's really just three ingredients by the time it gets to me anyways. It's cement, powder, and a bucket of water, and a bucket of sand or sand and gravel, depending on what you're making. And you basically just mix those three up. And you don't have to understand a lot of the chemistry. You just mix them up in a pile. And the way they mix up is with shovels, at least the way we did it. Shovels on the floor, and you just scoop in this motion like this and just go fast. And it's a lot of work, and you sweat, and your back hurts at the end of it. But that's what you do. And you do need somebody like Drew. Drew would be very complimented of me talking about him this way. But you need somebody like Drew that knows what they're doing to know how much water to put in. Because about 25 pounds of cement, the batches that we were making, 1 5-gallon bucket of sand, or no, sorry, 4 5-gallon buckets of sand, and then half a bucket of water, 3/4 bucket of water, a whole bucket of water. It really depends on how wet is the sand to start with. So you got to kind of know what you're doing with the sand or with the water, because if you don't, if you add too little water, you do a whole bunch of mixing, and then you didn't really get done, and you have to do the whole thing again, which nobody likes. If you had too much water, it's even more of a mess because then you have to take water out, which that doesn't involve like straws. That involves, let's put more cement powder on it and more sand on it until we have this huge room full of concrete, okay? So why do I bring up this whole story? It's because if you didn't know anything about sand and water and cement, you probably would not expect concrete to come out the other end of that experience. We're going to throw these three things on the ground, give some young guys some shovels, and then just have them slap it together. And out is going to come this thing that'll be a hard rock. You know, like, nobody pictures that, right? And if you look around just this room, and go ahead and look around right now. You can look away from me. Look around. Look at the types of people you see in this room. There's some people that are not like you. Whoever you are, there's some people that aren't like you in this room, right? Oh, yeah. Surprise, you know? So, and I'm just going to throw out there, like, some of you are like the water, some of you are like the cement, some of you are like the sand and the gravel. And by yourselves, you are not good materials to build a house out of. By yourself, you're not fit to be the fullness of God, right? But if we let some Drew in this story, if we let God put the right mixture of us together, and then honestly, we just get thrown around together some and actually mix, then something new comes out of that. And I don't know the sciences very well, but Rodolfo, my roommate, when I was living in Mexico, dealing with a lot of concrete, you talk about concrete, and he had some chemistry classes. Apparently, there's like a crystal structure that gets formed there, and that's why it's so hard, and also why it can break the way it does and stuff. So anyways, what comes out of that is something that wasn't there before. And yesterday, Donnie Moat was leading an event with a group of folks, Maywood folks, and some other people too. And yeah, so, and one thing I want to point out is I was talking to Mickey, and I don't know if Mickey's here, she was in first service, but Mickey's a different generation than Donnie, and she was telling me, I've never listened to rap before, but today I was able to experience God through the music here today. And so it was this idea of this mixing of people that would have never been like to find each other without Jesus, right? And Donnie's not perfect. None of us are perfect. And Donnie's event wouldn't have worked if it had just been Donnie plus 20 clones of himself doing it, right? It worked because Donnie has gifts from Jesus, and there's a team of people with gifts from Jesus. And they did this thing yesterday where, I don't know if I'm exactly right on the numbers, but I think 15 people made decisions to say, I want to follow Jesus. I want a new life, you know? And there was no Maywood stickers there. There was no, all those people need to come to Maywood, because it's not about Maywood. It's about Christians using their gifts to help people find new life in Jesus, right? And that's what we're about. Like, we want to be a part of it, but Jesus is the one that's taking credit for things. And that's the way we want it to be around here. But it only really works if you actually mix. And I can tell you from shoveling a lot of concrete that what I'm looking for while I'm shoveling is that dry clunk that hasn't really mixed with the rest of it. Because it happens. The last little bit is all these clumps of like a lot of cement and a little bit of sand and not enough water. And you're looking for those because that's what you actually need to mix into the rest of the batch. And here at Maywood, a lot of us could mix, right? A lot of us aren't like Mickey Taylor. We're not going to be around people so different from us, right? If you're one of the people that's always listening to rap, like then like 210 plays hymns during Sunday school, you know? And you could go experience God with a different type of music than you've experienced God with before, you know? So there's this idea of like get to know some people different from you here at Maywood and let God build us into something. That's what God's saying in this first part of this passage. So God's plan for us is to mix. And that mess on the floor, it didn't have a chance to participate. So we had to use shovels, right? Because it literally is just dead sitting there, you know? So you had to use shovels to get it to move. We don't want God to use shovels on us, right? Like, we want to actively participate with God. We don't want to get to the shovel level, right? Where he's just like making us do what we're supposed to do. And so choose to mix with some people you haven't mixed with before. Come on a Wednesday night and sit in a room with guys that you don't know. On Sunday morning, go somewhere you don't know. Today, there's no Chiefs game. Like, hang out with somebody that is different from you. and then figure out, is there something we could build together that would be a place that God could be at? So I cut that verse in half because it had so much to it. Here's the whole verse in verse 5. You also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house. What's our purpose here? It says to be a holy priesthood. I want you to repeat that phrase to me. It's really important to us. To be a holy priesthood. Out here on our sign, well, let's read the rest of the verse. Offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. The only things we can give to God that are worthy of God are things that Jesus helps us give to him. Our best sacrifices only really work when Jesus is involved. And that's why if you start your day and try really hard, but you haven't spent any time praying, you haven't spent any time listening to God, you haven't spent any time reading what God says, then you're not ready to serve God. It's only when you have Jesus working in you, like Eddie was talking about, when there's space for God to work in his class, that God can really work. But this holy priesthood thing, this is where I want to camp out for a minute. So out here on our sign right here on Winter Road says Maywood Baptist Church. And if I took the mic around, I'm not going to do this. Give people anxiety sometimes when I do it. So just I'll tell you today, I'm not going to do it today. But if I went around and said, what does it mean to be Baptist? And then I put the mic to people. My guess is we would get 100 different answers. And the number one answer we would get is, I don't know. That, honestly, like, that's what I would think. What does it mean to be Baptist? A whole lot of ideas and a whole lot of, like, I'm not sure what it means. I go to Maywood. You know, Johnny says it means eating food. Yeah, that might be our number one answer. It means getting food whenever we meet. The core of Baptist is right here in this verse, and it's that holy priesthood idea. So Baptists have this big belief in the priesthood of all believers, and they use that language from this verse. But what that means is that we believe every single person has the chance through Jesus to connect with God. And if you accept Jesus, then you don't need any mediator. All you need is Jesus to get to God. No important person in a suit or in a robe or in gold or anything like that to get to God. That's really the core of what Baptists emphasize. Now, why does that matter? It matters because it means you. You know, Ernie Sandy has the responsibility for Ernie's connection with God and to be a servant of God. And Carla Rose has the same responsibility. And nobody at the end of life is going to be able to say, well, Jake didn't tell me, so I didn't know this or that. You know, I mean, like, Jesus will have plenty to say to me that I could have done better. But the first responsibility comes to your shoulders. You had the chance to meet with God every day. And a priest is supposed to be someone who connects with God and who connects with people far from God. So all of us are called to that. That at your job, you are God's priest to that workplace. That in your family, you are God's priest to that family. In your recovery house, you are God's priest to that recovery house. That literally you're supposed to be connected with him and bringing his stuff to the people and bringing the people's stuff to him. You're supposed to be this bridge for both. Now, real quick before I leave this topic of Baptists, if you think every person has their own chance to connect with God, you put some responsibility on that. That means a couple of things. It means things like there's no special offices where, like, I'm the important person as pastor and you're lesser than me. You know, so Baptists aren't big on calling, like, no one calls me Father Jake or something like that. Because there's not, we're trying, and not to poke fun at other Christians, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to say, like, we're on an equal playing field. We're equal before God. It's what we're attempting. Another piece of that is we've started recently having small group leaders baptize people or other people close to the person getting baptized, baptize them instead of pastors. Why are we doing that? We're doing it because we're trying to disciple people. We're trying to connect them with somebody close to them to walk them through those early days of their walk with Jesus. And we're trying it. We don't have it all figured out. But there's nothing in the Bible that, like, well, Jake's the most important, so he's the one that should baptize people. It's just not biblical. What's biblical is that, like, we all have a connection with Jesus, and that's the only reason we should baptize someone else, is because we have a connection with Jesus. Today we're doing Lord's Supper, and that's the most significant, as far as reverence, thing that we do as a church. There's nothing we do that we should give more reverence to than to Jesus' death. But today, I'm not going to be leading us in the Lord's Supper. Mark Baker's going to be leading us here in a little bit. And why? What makes Mark special? What makes Mark special is that Jesus died for him and that Mark accepted that, you know? And I'm trying to make Mark our everyman, but today he wore a suit and tie, and I'm like, you're killing my analogy here, Mark. Like, you're supposed to, wear some sweatpants or something, man. You know, like, but he brought his best, which is what we should bring, right? So a lot of talk there. And you might be hearing that and think, like, man, I didn't know what Baptists were, but now I know how good we are, and we're better than everybody else. That might be your next thought, because that's the way things get twisted, right? We get something good, and then we get prideful, right? So as Baptists, we really grabbed a hold of this. We grabbed a hold of it really tight, even to, like, the autonomy of the local church. Because if you believe all of us can connect with Jesus, why do we need somebody in some big office telling us how Maywood should work? Like, Baptists don't work that way. Nobody tells Maywood what to do, hopefully, other than Jesus, right? But there's no central office that owns the building or tells us who to fire or what to do. I think those things are great. That's why I chose to be Baptist. But right across the street, Inglewood Assembly, you know, we did this sharing thing with them because they're Christians too. Like, the core Christian idea isn't this. The core Christian idea is that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and you don't get to God except with Jesus. If you believe that, like, you're Christian. And all these denomination things are just so small compared to that. I think this is really good. But I'll tell you, like, other denominations, they emphasize other things that they're trying to pull from the Bible too. And so when you're talking with somebody else, see what you can learn from them, okay? If they believe that core, that Jesus is the only way, then they're a brother or sister in Christ, right? We need to treat them that way. So don't get too up on, like, yeah, we're Baptist, because we don't have it all figured out, you know. So even though I like us best, but we don't have it all figured out. So going to go on to verse 6 here. So we talked a lot about building together. We talked a little bit about Baptist here. The rest of what I want to focus on these next few verses is Jesus, though. So it says, for in the scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion. It's talking about Jesus. A chosen and precious cornerstone. And the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Again, it says Jesus is chosen and precious to God. It says he's the cornerstone. He's our example. When you're building, that cornerstone sets the line for everything else. All of us need to look to Jesus for how should we act? What should we do? Jesus had to get alone and pray. We should get alone and pray. That sort of thing. Verse 7. Now to you who believe, and remember that, he says you who believe, I'm going to come back in a minute to that, this stone is precious. But to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. For those who don't believe, he says in verse 8, and a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. Every person comes to a crossroad of Jesus. How you respond to Jesus makes the difference here, whether you fall or not. You can't come to that crossroad and not make a decision. And to make a decision to say, I'm not going to believe in Jesus, means then that's your fall point. Make a decision, I'm going to believe in him, then that's your part of what Jesus is talking about here. So all hinges on belief, right? Because that's what he started with, for those who believe. Now look what happens in verse 9. They stumble not because of disbelief, it says they stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they're destined for. So if you were reading closely there, if you remember that belief part, you're like, wait, I thought this was about belief, not about obedience, not about action. If you will read the Bible closely, particularly the New Testament, you will see this all over the place. And if you just pull out one verse, you can get real messed up. But if you will read it, you'll see all this tension between belief, all you have to do is believe, and then this idea of like, there's all this obedience stuff. They're not separated when Peter talks about them. It's almost like, I don't have any change on me because I don't carry change. I should have got a quarter or something. But if I pulled out a penny, it's going to have Abraham Lincoln's head on the front of the penny, right? And you could say like, oh yeah, that's the head of the penny, but you can't separate that from the tail side of the penny, right? You can't separate that from the back. Belief is one side of the coin, and obedience is the other side of the coin. If you have one, you have the other, right? When we really see Jesus and we believe in him, if you believe what Jesus says, that he's the way to life to the full, then you start doing things to have that full life because you believe him, right? Yeah, amen. Thank you, Brian. So this is the idea. Don't try to split it out in your mind. But I know how some of us work. Some of us, as soon as we hear obedience, we remember what happened in that dark place that we don't want to talk about. Or we even remember what we did even maybe this morning. We start to feel all this shame, right? And earlier I was talking about if you trust in Jesus, you won't be shamed. So let's read on a little further here. It says, you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness and into his wonderful light. Look at all those things that it says there and remember all the stuff it said about Jesus. It said that Jesus was chosen. It said that Jesus was God's possession. And now God is offering us that same stuff that he gives to Jesus, he offers to us. This is way more than we would have ever asked for. It's coming to the king of the nation and saying, I don't want you just to help out, you know, just to give me some money or something. And saying, I want you to make me royalty. I want you to make me a part of the family. Like, nobody would come to somebody and ask for something like this. No one would go to God and say, God, I want you to make me a part of your family. I want you to treat me like you treat Jesus. But that's what Jesus offers to us. And when we realize that God brings us out of the dark mess that we were in, and he brings us into this light, about a week ago, we had this eyeglass thing here. If you guys remember, this is Rachel getting some glasses, who's one of our own. But Steve, this guy in the left, he runs the glasses ministry, and I got to sit by him. He was telling me about the week before, this lady that was at the eyeglass clinic, and as soon as she put glasses on, he said, she got up and she started dancing. She started saying, I could see, I could see. And I won't like dance around the stage for your guys' sake, but she started dancing and just saying that, I can see, so excited. And we can imagine that. If you go from everything's blurry to everything's clear. But we remember who we were before Jesus, right? And we can see where we were headed, right? And you know, like, he's brought you into this light. That you couldn't make it, but he's brought you here, and it's good. And if you're worried today because there's some sort of disobedience in your past, I want you to look at this last verse. It says, once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. We come to Jesus. Yeah. We come to Jesus, and he gives us mercy. And what we're about to do at this table, it takes mercy. None of us are worthy of Jesus' body. None of us are worthy of his blood. I want to tell you a quick story about Peter. I want us to connect with that. Because it's not until you really connect to the fact that, like, I don't deserve this gift, that you can really accept it as you should. So Peter, if you're reading in Luke chapter 22, it tells us a detail that doesn't come out a lot of times when people are talking about Peter and Jesus' death. So Jesus gets arrested. He's on trial. He's about to be crucified. They're already doing terrible stuff to him. But Peter had just earlier said, I'm going to follow you no matter if it gets me killed. And Jesus had thrown that in his face. If you've been around Jesus very long, he's probably thrown some stuff in your face. do that to me, at least a lot. And Jesus right back in his face and said, oh, really? I'll tell you the truth. Like, you're going to deny me multiple times before the rooster crows. What Luke tells us that doesn't always appear in the other Gospels is that Peter followed Jesus but couldn't get into the trial. He wasn't in the in crowd, and so he's stuck in the courtyard. And most of the time we picture that being very far away. But in actual practice, like, the courtyard had eyesight to the trial. And so Peter's sitting there trying to stay warm, trying to stay close to Jesus as he can, but he's getting all this pressure from people, and he's scared. And they start to ask him if he's following Jesus, and he starts to say, no, I'm not. The thing that's so terrible, and you can picture this, we've all had that moment where you did something you're totally ashamed of, and you got caught red-handed. There's just so much shame to see that person look at you, right? In Luke, we find out that when Peter does his last denial, Jesus looks from the trial. Jesus is on trial. Jesus is getting all the sin of the world, like, heaped on his shoulders, and he takes the time to look over at Peter. And imagine that. You just denied Jesus, and then Jesus himself on trial, like, looks at you. And it says that Peter goes out, and he weeps bitterly, right? Peter knows what shame is. But he knows what Jesus' mercy is too, right? Peter didn't despair. We look up to Peter because Peter took all that shame and he went back to Jesus with it. And Jesus gave him the way forward. Peter didn't stay the same. He took all that and he got Jesus' mercy, and then he did something with Jesus' mercy. Today, whatever is going on in your heart, you can come here right now as this stuff is passed out, and you can say, Jesus, I accept that you died for me. And Jesus, I want to carry that death inside of me so I can live for you. I want you to live for me. And no matter what else is true about you, if that's true, then you're welcome at this table. And it's not my table, it's Jesus's table. And so I'm going to hand things over to Mark, and the deacons are going to come up. Mark, would you lead us?